In 2002, Richard Scott Tyson raped a 12-year-old girl. She was his piano student. He sat across from her at a piano bench and used that same access to destroy her. He received 99 years in prison, with 86 years suspended. He walked out in 13 years. He registered as a sex offender. He went back into the community, and in 2021, he met a little boy and his family. He was warm and generous. He bought the kid video games. He bought him clothes. He paid for activities. He earned the family's trust to the point where they were allowed that boy to stay overnight at Tyson's house. Then he took him to a trampoline park, and that's where he met the second child. From there, he took both boys on trips. Hotels, resorts, amusement parks. He spent money on both of them. He built relationships with both families, and he used all of that access, all of that manufactured trust, all of those carefully chosen gifts and experiences to photograph both children, nude and in sexualized positions, in exchange for money, and to sexually abuse one of them. This happened between 2021 and 2023 while he was a registered sex offender, while he was legally required to report all online communication accounts to the registry. He didn't report his Snapchat account. Other sex offenders in his area reported to probation that he had a boy living with him and was driving children to school. Nobody stopped it. He's finally convicted in April of 2026, 4 counts: production of child sexual abuse material, possession of child sexual abuse material, attempted coercion and enticement of a minor, commission by a registered sex offender of a felony involving a minor. He faces a mandatory minimum of 35 years and up to life. He should have never left prison. The 99-year sentence with 86 suspended is the reason that two more children have to carry this. That judge's decision in 2002 is the reason for everything that happened between 2021 and 2023. The system did not fail these children at the point of arrest. It failed them at the point of that suspended sentence 23 years ago. Hey, you guys, welcome to Faith and Fire, God and Country. If you're new here, I am Brandon Lynette. I know I said full time on the show, and I already bumped you guys an episode yesterday. Family day came fast and furious, and that will always kind of it's gonna win everything over y'all. But I'm here today, and today's episode is brought to you by Super Patch. Today I want to tell you about the Victory Patch. If you're carrying something heavy and your body needs to be strong enough to actually hold it, Victory is the performance patch. Truly, I love it for athletes. I mean, we do have professional athletes, even that, where this does make you stronger, faster, more resilient without drugs. I know that's the mind-blowing part. You guys think I'm full of shit till you actually really try this. There are no chemicals, no ingredients whatsoever, no caffeine. It's just your body operating at the level it was built for. BrandonLynette.superpatch.com. I am the show is going crazy, y'all. I appreciate everybody tuning in for all the shares, for all the love, on my socials, everywhere. I just thank you so much. Obviously, that means I am looking for a brand partner, someone who wants to sponsor the show, who wants to reach an audience that takes action. All of my contact info is in the bio. Let's talk about Ryan Driscoll, 42 years old, Columbus, Ohio. In 2012, Driscoll was federally convicted for possessing child porn. He served 5 years. When he got out, he was placed under federal supervision from that conviction, supervised release, which means the government knew who he was and where he was, and he had conditions attached to his freedom. While under that supervised release, investigators received a tip about an online account with the username Diaper Undies Dude. That account was distributed across multiple online networks sharing child sexual abuse material. Homeland Security investigations traced it to Driscoll. On his phone, they found more than 1,000 videos and approximately 800 images. The material included content involving infants and toddlers. The category investigators described this as called hurtcore. That word exists because some predators specifically seek out content. They have created this little world where children are being deliberately harmed, subjected to pain, humiliation, and torture. This is not passive abuse. It is active cruelty to children who can't speak or run or call for help. He pled guilty in November of 2025. He was sentenced Tuesday to 264 months plus an additional 10 months consecutive. That is what, 22 years to be followed by another year with lifetime supervision after release. Listen, there's a lot I don't know, and there's things that don't make sense, and I try to understand it, but they're going to pull that again because he was supposed to be supervised the whole time he was collecting this material. Federal supervision. And over 1,000 videos of infants and toddlers being deliberately hurt were on his phone while the government theoretically had eyes on him. The supervision failed. It didn't work, and they're trying it again. The system that was supposed to catch him if he reoffended didn't catch him until someone else reported an anonymous screen name. The tip. The whole apparatus of federal post-conviction supervision was not what stopped him. It was a tip. Make that make sense. Like, help me genuinely understand that. It doesn't work, but they're gonna try it again. Carson Bigham, 24 years old. He's a firefighter in Columbus, Ohio. Firefighter, someone whose entire job is to run towards danger and protect people. Investigators found Bigham not because anyone's looking for him specifically. They found him because they were searching another man's devices in a separate child exploitation case and found conversations between that man and Bigham. The conversations were sexual and included explicit discussion about sex with children. Between August of 2024 and May of 2025, Bigham received files depicting prepubescent children engaged in sex acts with adults. He asked his contact for images of a specific child he apparently believed existed. He was sentenced Tuesday to 80 months. You guys, that is 6.5 years. And he's found by accident. By looking at someone else's phone. He never would have been caught otherwise. He was a firefighter responding to emergencies in Columbus, Ohio, while this is just chilling on his devices. We have Majdi Jones. I don't know how to pronounce the name, Majdi, if you want to look it up. 22 years old from Maryland. Found a 12-year-old girl on Snapchat. He knew she was a child. He knew she was a child. He lied about his own age. He exchanged nude photographs with her over a period of time. Then he made arrangements to meet her in person. He drove from Maryland to Delaware. He picked her up near her home in the early morning hours. He drove her to a park, engaged in sexual conduct with her in the back seat of his vehicle. Delaware prosecutors classify this as fourth degree rape. A condom was found in the back seat. He faces federal charges of coercion and enticement of a minor and traveling across state lines with intent to engage in illicit sexual conduct. If convicted on the enticement charge alone, the mandatory minimum is 10 years with a potential maximum of life. He drove across the state line intentional. He had the condom. He was 22 years old and he planned every single step of this. That one sucks. It's close to home. My daughter is about to turn 12, and I just could not imagine this being her experience as a parent. And another one that sucks, former Marine Carlos Fernando Alvanga Portilla, 29 years old, Everett, Massachusetts. Investigators searched his residence July 15th. On his Samsung Galaxy, they found more than 200 media files depicting child sexual abuse. The victims were estimated to be between 4 and 11 years old. The files date back to at least January of 2022. He was arrested this August on the 5th, released under conditions. He faces up to 20 years, followed by supervised release that can extend for the rest of his life. Supervised release. And we are talking about someone who served in the United States Marine Corps. He wore the uniform that my son is working towards right now. What shame is he bringing to the name of Marines? Because we know, I'm telling you right now, that boy was taught better under different conditions. He had those files going back 4 years. Anthony St. Jean, 35 years old, Lowell, Massachusetts. This is a guilty plea here. Between March and August of 2024, he knowingly distributed child sexual abuse material online. He also possessed material that included children younger than 12 years old. He pled guilty to one count of distribution and one count of possession. Distribution carries a mandatory minimum of 5 years and up to 20. His sentencing is scheduled for the 19th of November. He did admit this in court under oath. And this is the thing. You guys are like, wow, you came out hard and fast with that. And I just want you to catch your breath for a second. These are not five different stories. This is one story told five different ways. And the story of what happens when a society treats the predation of children as a processing problem rather than a spiritual crisis. Richard Tyson needed to be in prison from 2002 forward. Ryan Driscoll needed to be in prison from 2012 forward. The supervised release, the sex offender registry, the monitoring, the compliance checks, none of it worked. None of it stopped another child from being harmed because you can't manage what is fundamentally evil with paperwork. You can only stop it with consequences that actually match the crime with the communities that are paying attention. Every single one of these cases was caught by a person that was paying attention or by another investigation accidentally stumbling onto the evidence, not by the monitoring systems, not by the supervision conditions, but by tips, by an accident, by someone who noticed that something was wrong. And that someone could be you. And I'm going to say that every day, and I'm going to mean it every single day. That could be you and parents. Can we please, please stop letting our babies just be with other people like this? Please. These people marching against ICE, Homeland Security Investigations is one of the primary federal agencies responsible for combating human trafficking and child exploitation in the United States. Operation Cross Country recovers trafficking victims, many of them are minors, across this country every year. Operation Predator has led to thousands of arrests specifically for crimes against children. The same agents who enforce immigration law are, in many cases, the same agents who rescue children from trafficking networks, who investigated the very cases I just told you about, who traced anonymous screen names to the people behind them. When you protest ICE, listen to me. You are not just protesting immigration enforcement. You are protesting the infrastructure that catches predators and rescues children. You are marching against the agency that found Ryan Driscoll's thousands of videos of infants. You are screaming outside the building where the tip about Maji Jones was processed and acted on. The media has successfully separated these things in the public imagination. Immigration enforcement over here, child exploitation enforcement over here. They are not separate. These are the same agents and the same investigations, and it's the same funding and the same structure. And the trafficking corridors that move children across borders into exploitation are the same corridors that move people across the southern border when there is no enforcement. You are not protecting vulnerable people when you march against ICE. You are protecting the system that traffics them. And this is exactly what the government wants. This is exactly what the media wants. This is exactly what every disgusting elite, demon worshiping pedophile wants. For you guys to think that ICE is just breaking up very nice, calm American families, that's not true at all. Don't break the law, you don't have a problem, but stop protesting the guys who are protecting our babies. Y useful idiots. That's what you are when you're standing up against these guys. I want to talk a little bit about the polls today, too, really fast. And of course, the president, because there's a lot of manipulation happening that I want you to see. Reuters published a 33% approval rating. I told you about that. I told you to look into what's driving it. But I also want you to look at how these polls are constructed because the methodology matters enormously, and a lot of people don't look at it. And I'm watching people, I'm watching grown men actually throw tantrums about how they're not voting for anybody in the next election, how they're not voting for Democrat or Republican because they're tired of whatever nonsense, okay? And I am embarrassed for these men because not voting and not speaking up is how stuff got so far out of hand. That is not the answer right now. That is not the answer. So I want to just kind of talk about this. Polling organizations make choices about who to include in their sample, how to weight different demographic groups, and how to phrase questions even. So Reuters has historically oversampled registered Democrats relative to their actual share of the electorate, okay? The weighting decisions they make can move a result by multiple points in either direction, obviously. And Trump's poll numbers have consistently underperformed his actual electoral result in every cycle he's run. So in 2016, he was supposed to lose by double digits in some polls. In 2020, polls showed him losing in states he nearly won. 2024, he won while polls showed a close race. The poll is also a weapon. When you publish a 33% approval number, you demoralize supporters. You energize the opposition and you create a narrative of weakness that the media then amplifies into a story that feeds the next cycle of opposition fundraising. And that's it. We support this president not because he is perfect and not because every decision he makes is beyond criticism. We support him because the alternative is a return to the people who funded research at Wuhan and called it oversight, the people who sealed Maxwell's client list and called it justice, the people who've been sitting on the Epstein files for 20 plus years, the people who ran an open border for 4 years and called it compassion, the people who murdered your family and let them die alone with a gain of function sickness and a very toxic vaccine. Even if your support has to come down to the lesser of two evils support, it is still the right vote. And the 33% number is not a reason to stop showing up. It is a reason to show up louder. And with Iran, we've got the Islamic Republic of Iran. They've stated foreign policy that includes the destruction of Israel and the death of America. This is not just my interpretation, it is their official position. It is chanted at government events. It's printed in their state media. It is declared by their leadership. It's been like that for over 40 years. They have been pursuing nuclear capability for decades. A nuclear Iran is not a hypothetical threat. It is a timeline question. Islam, as practiced under that Sharia law, is not compatible with the United States Constitution. I don't know how clear I can say that. Sharia law establishes that apostasy is punishable by death, that women are legally subordinate to men in matters of marriage and divorce, inheritance and testimony, that religious minorities are subject to different legal standard than Muslims. None of these principles coexist with the First Amendment, the 14th Amendment, or the Equal Protection Clause. They are not a different cultural expression of the same values. They are fundamentally contrary to the values this nation is built on. Protecting this country is messy. It is messy. There are wars. There will be wars. There's military action that produces consequences that are painful and complicated and that do not resolve cleanly. Romans 13:4 says the government does not bear the sword for nothing. It is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out wrath on the wrongdoer. The sword exists. It is biblical and God authorized it. The question of when and how it's used is the hardest question in governance, and there is no version of it that's going to make everybody happy. There is no version of this that's ever going to feel completely clean. But the alternative to a country that is willing to use the sword when necessary is a country that cannot protect its people, and protecting the people is the job. Trust God with the hard parts. He has seen every military conflict in history, and he is not surprised by any of it, not even this one. I'm going to tell you guys a story from 2 Kings, chapter 18 and 19, the story of Hezekiah and what happened when the most powerful army in the world showed up outside Jerusalem's walls and started talking. Sennacherib, king of Assyria, sent his military commander to Jerusalem with a massive army. They camped outside the city walls, and the commander stood there and shouted up in Hebrew, the language the people of Jerusalem spoke, deliberately loud enough for the people on the walls to hear. He said, "Don't let Hezekiah deceive you. Don't let him tell you that God will deliver you. Look at every other nation we've conquered. Did their God save them? Name one kingdom whose gods were able to save them from the king of Assyria. What makes you think your God is different?" So he is speaking to the people on the walls, not just to the king's representatives. He's trying to break their morale from the outside. He wanted the citizens to hear the message and give up before the battle even started. He wanted fear to do the work that armies sometimes can't. Hezekiah's servants come to him in tears, and they told him what the commander had said. Hezekiah tore his clothes in grief. He went to the temple and he took the letter that Sennacherib had sent, the written threat from the most powerful military force in the ancient world, and he spread it before the Lord and he prayed. Lord, the God of Israel, enthroned between the cherubim and alone, our God, all over the kingdoms of the earth. You have made heaven and earth. Give ear, Lord, and hear. Open your eyes, Lord, and see. Listen to the words Sennacherib has sent to ridicule the living God. And he told God exactly what the enemy had said. He didn't pretend it wasn't serious. He didn't put on an act of faith that ignored a threat. He laid it all out before God, and then he said, "Deliver us so that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you alone are God." The prophet Isaiah sent word. God says, "Do not be afraid of what you have heard." That night, the angel of the Lord went through the Assyrian camp. In the morning, 185,000 soldiers were dead. Sennacherib woke up to an army of corpses, packed up what was left, went home, and he never came against Jerusalem again. I want to talk to every Christian who is watching the threats building right now. Iran pursuing nuclear capability, Sharia being practiced in American cities, institutions failing, predators recycling through the system, the polls being used to demoralize you, and feeling like the enemy is standing outside the walls shouting in your language. The devil has always done this. Sennacherib's commander chose Hebrew specifically because he wanted the people to hear and to give up. The media intentionally chooses your language, your channels, your feeds, specifically to put the message where you will find it. Don't let Hezekiah deceive you. Your God isn't different. Give up. Take the letter, take the headline, take the threatening thing that was sent to you specifically to break your morale. Go to God, spread it before him, and say, "See this, do something about it." He answered Hezekiah that night, 185,000 soldiers dead by morning. He is that same God today. And to my soft Christians, I love you, but I need you to hear something. The reason I'm still behind this microphone after the death threats and the attacks on my kids and the exhaustion of the hate on my page. I will tell you every single day, it is not because I'm tough or brave. It's because I genuinely believe that my silence costs someone else something. That there is a parent who needs to know what's happening in the system before they trust a registered sex offender with a helpful smile and a trampoline park invitation. I believe that there is a person who has been holding their voice back because they're afraid of what it will cost, and the only thing they needed to hear was someone else to do it first and say they survived it. It might be the person listening to this right now. You don't have to start a podcast. You don't have to have your posts go viral. You just have to say the truth out loud in the room that you're already in. Share the episode, send it to one person, leave a comment on something you actually agree with so the person who wrote it knows they're not alone. Show up in the school board meetings, ask the question at city council. Check the background of anybody you're letting your kids spend time with and vote in the primary, not just November. The enemy's not afraid of a church that feels things privately. He's afraid of a church that says everything out loud. Be the church that says it out loud. And if you have never given your life to Christ, this is what I want you to know today. Hezekiah didn't have to perform a perfect faith. He tore his clothes. He went to the temple in grief. He spread the threatening letter before God and told him exactly what the enemy said. He was afraid, and he took that fear to God anyway. And God responded. That's the invitation. You don't have to have this like polished, cleaned up version of yourself. You don't have to show up with this faith that pretends nothing is hard. The faith that takes the hard thing directly to God and says, "See this, I am not equal to this. Please, please help." He answers that prayer. He's always answered that prayer. And he answers it for people who've never prayed before, just as much as he answers it for people who've been praying their whole lives. So I'm saying, come to him. Not when you figure everything out, but now with the threatening letter in your hand and the fear you haven't told anyone else about and the weight of everything you hear today still on your chest. He is the same God who answered Hezekiah that night. He's not done answering. God, faith, fire, country. I love you guys. I'll see you tomorrow.